Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and each week we explore a new facet of UFOs and the paranormal. And tonight, our show is about Haunted Rhode Island. This is actually a book written by ghost researcher and author Thomas D. Augustino. That's D apostrophe A-G-O-S-T-I-N-O. So I'm really excited to have him as a guest tonight, but before I introduce him, first I want to cover a little bit of exciting news that's going on. First I want to talk a little bit about a famous UFO incident that occurred actually many years ago. It's one of my favorite cases. It occurred in Ohio to two police officers on April 17th, 1966. Deputies Dale Spauer and Wilbur Neff were alerted by their local station to be on the lookout for a UFO that was reportedly heading in their direction. This is a very, very famous case. It's been reported in many, many books, but I've got a really exciting update on this case. So moments later, the officers were shocked to actually see a 50-foot-wide metallic saucer-shaped object with a dome on top. They could hear no noise except for a soft hum. The object glowed brightly and sent down a powerful beam of light. And Deputy Spar, he said, "I had never seen anything this bright before in my life." Now, the officers radioed their superiors that they had the UFO in sight, and the dispatcher told them to keep the object in view while they sent another squad car with camera equipment. Well, at this point, the UFO began to move east towards Pennsylvania, so officers Spauer and Neff followed the object, and before long, they were racing along at about 90 miles per hour. And whenever they fell behind this UFO, it would slow down and actually wait for them. And meanwhile, at the same time, other officers were monitoring the radio frequencies, and they went out and also observed this object. So this UFO played a cat and mouse game with the police officers, eventually leading them about 90 miles away into another state. And they actually called the Pittsburgh airport, who told them that they had picked the object on their radar, though they later denied this. Now, Air Force officers sent Blue Book to investigate. Blue Book is, of course, the Air Force's main investigative body at that time for UFOs. And the officers interviewed the Blue Book officers interviewed the police officers, and they concluded that what the officers had seen was Venus. Now, this explanation caused a public outrage, and even a judge and former congressman called the explanation ridiculous, and Congressman William Stanton of Ohio said flat out the Air Force has failed in its responsibility, and Project Blue Book consultant J. Allen Hynek also disagreed. So it was a big case. Deputy Spar, he said, after the incident, he was interviewed many times by reporters, he said, "If I could change all that I've done in my life, I would change just one thing, and that would be the night we chased that damn saucer." Now, ever since then, he's kind of been very timid for doing interviews. No one's been able to get a hold of Deputy Spar. But just recently, his son contacted a newspaper and revealed the rest of the story. It turned out following this incident, Deputy Spar kept seeing the same UFO. This is actually not that unusual. It's called the repeater problem. So apparently, this UFO and Deputy Spar had some sort of relationship following this incident. So he saw it several times, and it was not good news. He started losing weight. His wife divorced him, and he was eventually fired, or he quit. And at that point, he refused to talk to any reporters. And his son now says that his father decided to drive a taxi and then worked later at a local mine where he tumbled into an open shaft and broke his back and fell into a coma. Now, this is where things got really weird. He was hospitalized, but according to Deputy Spar's son, a nurse who was assigned to his father's room quit. She absolutely would not work there, and when asked why, she said that Deputy Spar was possessed by, quote, an alien. So apparently, this encounter affected him very deeply, which is not unusual. But I just think it's kind of interesting news on a classic case. Now we have some other interesting news in Fortiana, Bigfoot. An author, Jeffrey Meldrum, has just released a book called Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science. Now Jeffrey Meldrum is actually a tenured professor of anatomy at Idaho State University. And his research is causing a huge controversy. I once wrote an article about people who see UFOs and then reveal their encounter are fired from their jobs. This has happened many times. Researcher John Mack experienced this when he released his book, Abduction. And apparently, Jeffrey Meldrum is now under attack by many people at his university. For example, Martin Heckworth, a senior lecturer, says Jeffrey Meldrum's research is a joke. And not only that, Jeffrey Meldrum actually decided to hold a conference at the university, and more than 30 professors signed a petition criticizing the university for holding this conference, which I think is ridiculous, because actually Jeffrey Meldrum is supported by Jane Goodall, the world-famous authority on African chimpanzees, and she actually says that he gives a very level-headed scientific analysis to this subject. So it's unfortunate that people are still criticizing people who are just trying to perform good science. It's really unfortunate, but at least people are doing the science, and he is a tenured professor, so they can't fire him. So there's a little bit other interesting news. Just recently, in November of last year, a new petroglyph was discovered in Chile. Now, there's a lot of excitement over this image because it's oval-shaped and has long hands, and it looks a lot like an alien being. Now, the petroglyphs are carved on surfaces that are oxidized by the passage of time. And they're found on these walls near cemeteries. So Sotero Armeia, who's the president of the village where these petroglyphs are found, says that this particular petroglyph is causing a lot of attention, and people are coming all across the world to actually view it. And they've dated it to about 2300 BC, which is about the arrival of the Incas. But they don't know what it is. It's a very anthropomorphic-looking figure. But it looks like aliens, and there's lots of petroglyphs that seem to do this. It's just interesting that they're still discovering all these petroglyphs. So that's basically it on the news. We do have some more exciting books being released. Jim Sparks, his book, The Keepers, has just been released. Jim Sparks is an alien abductee, and I'm hoping to have him on the show later. Michael Newton has released a book called Strange Indiana Monsters, so that's also something you might want to look into. And actually, now let's just get to our guest, because he's got a really interesting book. It's called Haunted Rhode Island, and this has just been released by Schiffer Books. Now, there's nothing quite like a good story, and tonight's show is going to be about one of our favorite subjects, ghosts. So if you don't believe in ghosts, you will ask tonight. I mean, Rhode Island may be one of the smallest states in the United States, but from this book, judging from this book, it's definitely one of the most haunted. I mean, the stories in here are amazing. There's stories of vampires and floating coffins and long-dead sailors who prowl lonely docks. There's a park where there's this phantom girl who giggles. There are ambushed soldiers, ghostly soldiers from a long-forgotten battle. There's mysterious gray apparitions in cemeteries, all sorts of really interesting stuff. Now, Thomas DiAgostino resides in Rhode Island. He's a hands-on researcher, which is nice. He's not one of your normal armchair researchers. He actually goes out there and investigates this stuff firsthand. And he's very accomplished. He's been doing this for many, many years, over 23 years. And he has actually written numerous articles for various publications, including Fate magazine and several other books. And, of course, this book that he just wrote, Haunted Rhode Island. And I believe you have other books coming out, too, don't you, Thomas?
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm really excited.
Well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, tell me, how did you get started in ghost research?
Well, as a child, actually, I was always into ghost stories and watching, you know, the Twilight Zone and stuff like that.
Right.
But I really, really got into starting the research and studying when I stayed at a house for about a week, and it was very haunted. Matter of fact, I moved in with a few people because it was a big house and there was room for them.
Right.
My friend had bought it, and he wasn't going to live there. But I ended up leaving after about 7 days.
You're kidding. How old were you?
Me? Right now, I'm 46.
No, I mean when you moved in to that...
Oh, I was 22.
And you'd never heard, I mean, never believed in ghosts before that?
Well, I did, yes. I actually grew up, my house that I grew up in was haunted also. But, you know, a lot of my brothers and sisters attributed to other things. But there was a lot of stuff we couldn't explain, like doors actually unlatching and opening on their own.
Wow.
And things like that. Yeah, it was quite... But this was like the real holy grail of what...
The one where you lived in an apartment for 7 days or house?
Yes.
Well, what happened there?
Well, the first night we moved in, we were all alone in a three-story house. It was originally a farmhouse, but I guess the people who lived there before made it into three apartments for their kids. And upstairs, we could hear people moving around on the second floor all night long.
And no one was up there?
Well, I thought we were on the third floor. I figured it's either the person coming back to get more of his belongings, or people were partying in there, you know. So the next day, I didn't bother them. The next day, I went down and looked around, and nothing had been touched at all. So I sprinkled baby powder all over the floor. Figuring if they come back, I'll get footprints.
Right, good idea.
The next night, we heard the same noises, and the next day when I went down there, there was not a single footprint in the baby powder.
Wow. So how do you explain that?
I don't know. Somebody was moving furniture around or something, but none of the furniture was moved either. And then another night, as we sat near the top of the stairs, it sounded like just a raging maniac kicked open the door and came booking up the stairs. But we were at the top near the railing, and all that blew by us was a wind.
Wow.
Yeah, and another night I was woken by what sounded like, it sounded like a static scratching noise. At first I thought it was a tree with the wind rubbing up against the window. But when I went into the parlor to check, there was this oblong glowing like white light in the corner.
Wow.
And it started making its way toward me, and I was actually, I don't know if I was just frozen in fear or just trying to, like, hoping to make contact.
But kind of torn between the two, huh?
Yeah, a little of both. And my friend who was in the other room had come out because I guess he heard me, and he turned the light on, and whatever happened, it dissipated, or I guess the light caused it to disappear. If it was energy, whatever happened.
Right.
And one of the last nights we were there, we were all sitting around talking. And it was about 8:30 at night, and I went in the kitchen, and I got a glass of water, and I was walking out of the kitchen. As I was walking out of the kitchen, the same thing happened with me and the three other people that were with me, and they felt like actually all time stood still, and we were just seized by something. We couldn't move.
Jeez.
And the window above the stairs came out of its socket and just rolled across and laid to rest at the top of the stairs.
The window did?
Yeah, the whole window.
Wow.
And the second it stopped, it was like the spell was broken. But everybody who was in the house just bolted out of there and would never come back in. So I lasted one more night.
Wow.
And in that time, I heard the kitchen table. It sounded like somebody threw it with all the dishes on it. But when I ran to the kitchen, it was just absolutely undisturbed.
Jeez.
I moved out. I even got a picture of... something in the window looking out at me.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, and I took a picture of it from afar.
What does the photograph show?
Well, it shows someone in a white dress or robe looking out the window. But when I took the picture, obviously no one was there.
Right, right. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So did you ever figure out why that house was so haunted?
No, there was very little records of anything around here in some of the old farm towns. And the guy who sold it to my friend sold it very, very cheap. And my friend never moved in. He sold it also.
Right.
And the people who live there now say they've heard, when they first moved in, they heard stuff, but it's been pretty quiet since.
Wow. I wonder why that is. It'd be so empty.
Maybe it didn't like me, huh?
Well, maybe the ghost has left her. I don't know.
Yeah, Either they left or they're just happy with the new owners.
So is that what got you started, researching this stuff?
Yeah, at that point I started trying to find the scientific reasons why everything happens and studying the paranormal as much as in everything I can by everybody who's experts, anything who's ever lived on any kind of investigations, and just volumes of books, and actually going out and going to places and visiting them as well.
Right. It sounds actually like a lot what happened to me. I started researching after I saw my mom's ghost.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like a lot of just people who are writing books about ghosts grew up in haunted houses or actually experienced this stuff firsthand.
Yeah, it's very, it would cause you to want to know more, that's for sure.
Yeah. So how did this all evolve? I mean, what was your first, you just started asking your friends and family and stuff like that?
For
stories about ghosts?
I'd start reading up local, I love local folklore and I love history. So I'd start reading up and looking for places, and I started visiting them. As I was visiting them, I would suddenly, I'm thinking to myself, I should write down what I do here, because there's some places we actually had experiences and things happen.
Wow.
And then at one point I said to myself, well, I should write a book. the book is based on all the places in the state of Rhode Island that people can actually visit.
Now, how big is Rhode Island?
It's a huge 37 by 48 miles. I think most cities are bigger.
Wow. So it's smaller than Maryland?
Oh, it's the smallest state by far. I think Baltimore's the size of Rhode Island.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the smallest state by far. It's only 37 miles wide by 48 long, I think it is.
Jeez.
So, yeah.
You got a lot of history there, though, right?
Well, yeah, it's one of the original 13 colonies. It was actually the last to join. And, of course, you have a big brunt of King Philip's War that took place here.
Really?
And also, Rhode Island has more cemeteries in it than any other state in the country.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
With that size?
Yeah,
wow.
Well, most of the time, as you go west later on, they started just having garden cemeteries, which were vogue in the early 19th century. But here, they buried everyone on their property.
Huh.
And Rhode Island, having settled, was mostly farmland. The city of Providence was it. And even that, the North Burial Ground is very small comparison.
Wow.
But most of little cemeteries, there's like 10 of them within a square mile here.
Gosh, that's so interesting. So what is the geography like? Are there mountains?
No. The highest hill is Jeremoth Point. It's 812 feet above
Wow.
sea level.
So I suppose if you climb up to the top of that, you could see the entire state.
At one time, John Brown and Jeremoth Brown, who actually lived there, said that they could see down to Newport. Whether they could or not, I don't know. But it's in the western corner, northwestern corner of the state.
Right.
But now it's all trees and overgrown.
I heard that Rhode Island also has a lot of historical landmarks, more than most states.
Yeah, it does. It's very, because a lot of things happened here. I mean, the very first, matter of fact, after Reverend William Blackstone actually settled Boston.
Right.
When people started moving in, he actually couldn't stand it. He wanted to be alone. So he came to Rhode Island 1 year before Roger Williams.
Huh.
And he settled in Cumberland, which is the north end of the state.
Right.
And the funny thing about this, there's a memorial to him, but his actual remains are gone. They think they were thrown out in 1965.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the first settler of the state. That's.
So what's about the population? Do you know of the state?
No, I forgot the population as of the census, but it's not a lot.
Right.
it's for its size, it's rather populated, but it's not really at all. You got the city of Providence, and that's kind of populated, but out where we live, the houses are very sparse. Matter of fact, we live out in the country here, and in 1810 it was more populated than it is now.
Wow, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It's neat that it's a small state because that gives you the opportunity to really cover the entire state with your book.
Right, yeah. Like I said, I found about 90 places that the public could visit that are actually haunted and legend. And if someone was to come here for the weekend, they could actually hit almost, well, at least half of them.
Jeez.
If they were diligent.
Well, so they have to get, definitely have to get your book. So tell us about one of your first cases where, you know, something interesting happened.
Well, the Ramtail Factory is one of my favorites, where in Foster, Rhode Island, it was originally a woolen factory, water-driven, from 1799, and then in 1813, the partner, Paley Walker, who married into the Potter family, he helped out, and they came, the Ramtail Factory. It was called Foster Woolen Mill, but I guess they called it Ramtail because they took wool.
What kind of factory? Wool?
Yeah, it was a woolen factory where they actually turned the wool into cloth and, you know, thread and whatnot.
Okay.
And at one point, he was a rather extravagant spender from what I read. He got ousted from the partnership. He was the night watchman. So at night, he'd watch over the factory, the three or four buildings, and then in the morning, he'd ring the bell, and that would summon the workers. And he had an argument where they ousted him from the partnership.
Right.
And it was said that he would someday find the keys to the mill in a dead man's pocket. And one morning, the bell failed to ring, and this was on May 19th, 1822. And when they broke into the mill, they found him hanging from the bell rope.
Oh.
So they buried him, and then a few nights later, the bell started ringing at midnight.
Huh.
And they couldn't find who was doing it, so they removed the rope, but it kept ringing, so they removed the bell. And then the town was awoken. This is all in written record also.
Wow.
It's written in books from the state, agricultural books and stuff that attribute the closing of the factory to his ghost.
Huh.
And the state census even says the place was haunted in 1886.
Huh. That's amazing.
Yeah, we were there. The town people actually quit the mill because it would start running at midnight with no one there.
Wow.
So they eventually quit, and the mill burned down, but we did some investigations there. One of my investigations, we were sitting about 45 minutes in the dark when this white light all of a sudden came up and started floating around in the air inside one of the main remains of the buildings. And later, it disappeared behind trees. And later, when I went back there in the day, it was about the height of where the first floor would have been.
Huh. So how big was the light?
Oh, it was almost the size of a regular human.
The shape of a human?
Oh, not really. It was like more like just a tall, wide, oblong light. But it was it wasn't a flashlight because it cast no beam. It was just moving around like about 30 feet from us.
Wow.
Up in the air, about the height of the floor. And another time I went up there and did an investigation, I was with a few other people. We were sitting there really still, and we could hear a lantern come toward us. But you could see, and the lantern came by us, the swinging of it. And I know lanterns really well because we actually light our house with lanterns.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I put lights in them and stuff, but, you know, we move them around. And it disappeared, and then it came back, and then it came back one more time. And the people I was with, they would never come on another investigation with me ever.
Why, they were too scared?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you could see each other, but you could hear this thing, lantern comes creaking by you, and they didn't leave. They were afraid to even leave. I almost had to pick them up. It was like picking up mannequins.
You couldn't see anything, though?
No, we saw nothing. All we heard was the lantern walk by us.
How close?
Creaking. Oh, within about 5 feet.
Well, that is spooky. That is definitely spooky.
Yeah, someone else went down there and had the same experience. They wrote to me about it. And they even wrote to Fate magazine about it. And then someone else had, people started emailing me when the book came out about their experiences at the Ramtail Factory.
Mm-hmm.
We went there with Keith and Carl Johnson, the two demonologists who were on TV all the time.
Oh, okay.
And they're friends of ours. And they got a picture of something they put on their website. When they were collecting the camera, they turned around and flashed. The same oblong light was behind Keith's wife.
Wow.
And she was able to snap a picture of it.
This is a really active haunting. It's been going on for a long time, huh?
Since 1822.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just from one person died, right?
Yes.
With the whole factory quit and...
Yeah. The whole factory went out of business because it even mentions it in state censuses.
That's amazing. So what does it look like now? Is it just is there a building there?
There's all ruins there, just giant foundations in the woods.
Jeez, I wonder why no one's ever rebuilt it.
Well, the Hopkins actually owned it, and then the state property, Barden Reservoir, was put in, and the river, Pontagansett River, runs into the reservoir in the Scituate Reservoir, which is our drinking water supply. So it's actually a watershed land.
Oh.
They can't build on it.
Wow. Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
You're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight is Thomas D. Agostino. That's D apostrophe A G O S T I N O. Is that right?
Yes.
And the book we're discussing is Haunted Rhode Island. Now, do you have a website or where can people reach your book or get your book?
They can get the book actually through either Barnes & Noble, Borders Book, Amazon.com, or Schiffer Books, which would be schifferbooks.com.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's really out there in a lot of places.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So have you tried to place the book in, like, local shops throughout your state?
Oh, yeah, a lot of people carry them in the local shops, too. There's tons of small stores that have them.
Great, wow.
I go into a lot of places, and there's the book, and I'll tell them, hey, this is my book, and I sign it all for them so they can... Oh, we were in New York State, and they had them for sale there, so it's pretty... I guess it gets around.
So it's doing pretty well, then?
Yes. And it's great because it's almost... It's like a tour guide, because it's all places that people can visit. It's not private homes.
Right. It's really, it should do very well, considering, Rhode Island is such a small state. It would be perfect for someone to hit all these spots, like you said, in one day. How many were there?
I think it was 88.
88. Jeez.
Yeah. Right. There was others that I found, but then some were kind of private property, and others that were just debunked as just a legend,
So what was the name of that factory again?
The Ramtail Factory.
Ramtail. That's the major one?
That's one of the major ones in Foster.
Huh. So what's another really good case?
The Stagecoach Tavern in Chepachet, Rhode Island, which is actually called Tavern on the Main. In the book it says Stagecoach, but it's called Tavern on the Main. You can't miss it. That one has had everything from killings in there to the end of the Dorr War with over here in Rhode Island when Thomas Dorr and Samuel King fought, almost fought. Well, he became a governor and the other one wouldn't step down.
Oh, really?
In 1842. Yeah, and people have seen, I've actually gotten EVP recordings there, and someone I know set up a camera, and they got what looked like a man in colonial garb walking through the dining room with a lantern.
They filmed it?
Yeah, and I tried to, it was like a shadowy, you could see through it, and I tried everything I could to recreate that from having people drive by with headlights and, flashing lights and whatnot, turning around in the parking lot across the street, and there was no way, we couldn't recreate it.
Wow.
But, there's a lady that appears in the booth. As a matter of fact, if you called there, they could have you on the phone for hours telling you things that have happened.
Okay. This is a tavern?
Yeah, it's a restaurant tavern. The food's incredible. And, the tavern, everyone's friendly. But, boy, they get a lot, every day something happens.
And the employees, everyone talks about it?
They're used to it.
Really?
They're used to it. There's been a couple there that have been there for like 10, 15 years, and they just, now there's a ghost of a little boy, there's a ghost of a woman who sits in a booth, there's a ghost somewhere in the bar. When we did an investigation, my wife was sitting there talking after with some of the investigators,
right?
And a crystal glass she had a drink in exploded into teeny, teeny fragments, but there was four others around it.
Huh.
And it flew all over everybody. We had it analyzed, and they said the only way that could have happened is if somebody took a huge hammer and just pounded it obliterate it like that.
What's going on in that building?
I don't know. Like I said, I got an EVP recording there also, and we've had some weird things. There's a lot of antiques in there, too. Obviously, it was built in 1799, you know, and a lot of the stuff is still there, the original.
1799?
Yeah.
That's 200 years old.
Right, yeah.
So, is it a big building? Is it?
Actually, yes, it is. There's an upstairs hall there as well. Small, not huge, but it'll hold 125 people. And we were married there on Halloween because we loved it. It was haunted. And it's a nice restaurant and a tavern. And then there's a few apartments off to the side. And there's the old area which there used to be the stables. That's part of the kitchen now.
Right. Well, the apartments, do they rent out the apartments?
No, yeah, there's two apartments upstairs that are rented out.
To people who live there permanently or out there?
Like, yeah.
Oh, wow. Are those haunted too?
From what I hear, they say they are. The people have told me stories up there, but I've never gone in them to actually do investigations because downstairs is just so open and easy to work with.
So why are so many ghosts there? There's got to be a reason.
Yeah, I think either, well, there's a lot of turmoil in there. You know, over the years, because of the Thomas King Door War thing there, Jedediah Sprague was bankrupted when the Samuel King militia wouldn't leave. They stayed all summer and they bankrupted him. People have died in there. Just a ton of history. Because upstairs was originally there, you know, it was a place they'd stay. It was a stagecoach stop.
Well, this brings me to an interesting question, which I think, you know, I always like to ask ghost researchers this, about how they feel about ghosts. I mean, in a place like that, this tavern, are these ghosts what you would call, like, active spirits, or do you think it's sort of like a residual haunting with the walls and just the environment itself is sort of echoing past activity, or maybe it's a window to the past? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because actually in this case, I think there's a mixture of both more residual than not, because some of the tragedies happened as recently as 1973. So I think there's energy, definitely energy in there, but there's a lot of residual because some of the people who've walked by, we've been in, we've gotten readings in the EMF meters, and they've told me how they've just be walking by, and all of a sudden they just see something standing there, like a woman.
Right.
And then she disappeared. No reason, no nothing. So it could be definitely a place that can catch residual energy and replay it. But then there's also the things where we've been sitting there, and Gene would call me up, the old owner, and he said, "You got to come down here." And I went, you know, I'd go down there, and he'd tell me what happened. He was sitting there one day, and he took a box of coasters up. And he walked over behind the bar, and when he looked up, the box of coasters was all over the floor.
Wow.
So 8 or 9 feet away, and they were thrown everywhere.
Wow. What's the name of this place again? The
Tavern on the Main.
The Tavern on the Main.
Yeah, it used to be called the Stagecoach.
Wow. You know, when something haunting like that happens, that's, I think, an active spirit. I mean, when it's affecting the environment or interacting with the witnesses.
Yeah, he's had, I mean, even in the kitchen, they've been standing there talking, and like, the takeout containers just fly straight across the kitchen, you know, right off the microwave of the office out of nowhere.
So does the hotel keep a history? And, or, you know, like, do they let people write down their experiences in a registry or something like that?
Oh, as a matter of fact, there's one table that looks like a big desk table. It's a dining table, and it has a drawer, and people used to write down their experiences and put them in there.
Wow. Yeah, because here in California, we have a bunch of haunted hotels. It seems like most of them, well, that's not a hotel, but restaurants too and stuff. It seems like most of these businesses actually flaunt their ghosts. They're happy to say, you know, we are haunted.
Yeah, well, these people don't mind the new people because the lady who owns it now with her husband, she grew up in what is called the Taft Tavern, which was an old tavern up until 1950. For 200 years, the Tafts owned it and ran it as a stagecoach stop again. And that's haunted. So she grew up with a haunted place, and now owning another one, it doesn't bother her at all. She loves it.
So does your family believe in ghosts? Your brothers and sisters? And
yes, they do.
It's funny because I have a lot of people who are my friends and family don't.
Oh, really?
And I just can't seem to convince them no matter what I do. They won't read my book. So. You're lucky.
Well, the thing is, most people around here, there's just a lot, so many stories that most people don't believe in them until something happens. But I've had some people tell me, well, I don't believe in that, I don't believe in that. And then 10 minutes later, you know, something happened to me once.
Wow.
I can't explain. So they don't believe in it, but they always have something that they can't explain, you know, which is fine.
Yeah, it's funny that they're just not quite ready to allow that into their belief system, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, but most people still get that stigma that it's like dead people running around, you know, tearing your head off or something. It's scientific to me. It's more scientific than anything.
Right. Well, I'm fascinated by it. I mean, whenever something haunted happens, I always remind myself it's just a person, more than likely.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Well, I put in a good analogy. Like, I tell people, well, you know, every day you play with energy. You turn your lights on. That's energy. You plug in your microwave. That's energy. You know, you light a candle. That's energy. You know, and we're energy. We're electricity,
right,
basically. And when the body dies, where does it go? It's not. It doesn't die. Energy doesn't die. It's not recreated. It just transfers.
Exactly.
People with strong wills, their energy can stay together where they can, you know, move things, work things still.
I'm assuming it's that we all have an astral body, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And that's what most of these ghosts are. And somehow they're able to manipulate the physical environment, which that's what I don't understand.
Right. And that, I mean, either. I mean, we're always, that's why we investigate and try to learn as much as we can. And I always try to share everything I know with anyone else so someone can put another piece of a puzzle in.
Right.
Until we can actually die, go on to the other side for 3 or 4 months, you know, take notes and everything and come back and say, okay, here's all the, you know, and we're just basically out to lunch with it, grabbing
right.
the next drawers.
It's amazing. It's still an open question, life after death. And ghosts, as far as I'm concerned, there's enough proof to prove in a court of law.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know why it's still an open question with mainstream science, honestly.
I think because they don't know what to do. You know, I mean, they just where do you start? You know, you can't take a ghost home and you know have dinner with it and interview it. You can't.
No.
It's just really hard to. You got to do the best you can. And I think because like the residual haunts and people claim or think those are active energy haunts and then they get deluded by that or they get confused by it, you know, by not knowing the difference between the two. So the ghost of a lady appears in your house and now you're running around looking for it everywhere and it may not happen again for another 8 years.
Right. Well, I think the best way to tell the difference between a residual haunting and an active one is if it interacts with you. I mean, if the ghost is looking at you, then you know. But you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not always easily apparent, I guess.
No, it's the thing is, it's just a lack of study on it and the stigma that's been attached over the years that makes it so much that people get afraid and whatnot. It's nothing to be afraid about.
Right.
Actually, it's a wonder of science. It's something, if it happens to somebody, they should feel lucky. They've just experienced a wonder of science.
It's funny. I know, and I've interviewed a lot of people who've seen ghosts, and it's true. They're often very afraid. And not necessarily anything bad happened to them.
No, it's just because you don't know what to expect. You know, you're in the defensive side now because you can't defend yourself. I mean, if something appears that you can, if you could put your hand through it, you know, what is it going to do to you? It's just again the stigma attached.
Right.
And when I first encountered those things, I was afraid. But then now I'm the nut that runs toward the danger. And my wife loves it, too. She does all the photography for the book, Arlene.
So you've got lots of photographs in the book?
Yes. We try to visit every single place we put in our books.
Right.
So we naturally want to have photographs of the places so people can see what they're reading about. Or if they go visit, they'll know the marker right off the bat.
Wow. And were you able to put any photographs of, like, ghosts in there?
The only thing we got was, because the house I stayed in was private, I couldn't.
Right.
And a few others that we have were private homes, I couldn't. But the one thing we did get was in John Stone's Tavern, which is called Stone's Public House in Ashland, we got what is a real orb. And because we used 35 millimeter film instead of digital pictures,
Right.
You know, it's on the negative. And my wife, being a professional photographer, people always come up to her, and we've seen zillions of what are supposed to be orbs. But this is a genuine orb.
So your wife joined you in the investigations, huh?
Oh, yeah. So she loves it.
Oh, how exciting. That's fun that you can do that together.
Oh, yeah.
So on the tavern on the main,
mm-hmm.
This is one of the more haunted spots. Has anything bad happened to anyone? I mean, you mentioned a glass exploding. That could be a little dangerous, but it's not what I would call evil.
Right. Nothing as far as the ghosts go there. Nothing bad has ever happened to anybody. Just no more than being frightened.
Right.
You know, like the ghost of the little boy startles people sometimes because it all of a sudden just appears there in old-fashioned clothing. And
huh.
It's just more people just get a little, or some people get, you know, like me, I get all excited, thrilled, whoa, okay, let's do it. But, you know, a lot of people just sitting and eating dinner.
Well, I wonder what it is that causes all that activity. The veil must be really thin there, or just, like you say, all those tragedies pile up on one another, and the energy attracts more of those kind of events.
Yeah, it could be the atmosphere, you know, like pressure zones. Because I lived in a place where CB truckers would come through my amps and when I was playing.
Right.
And it would happen there, and it would happen like, it was so, the place was so, I don't know, I guess it was the pressure zone, but we'd have severe thunderstorms. It was almost as if there was a ring around us protecting us.
Wow.
We'd see the thunder and lightning, and we'd get a little rain all around us. And the CB trucks and everything used to come through my amps, but they were 40 miles away.
Isn't that interesting?
It must have something to do with that also, like the magnetic Earth's atmosphere, the magnetic area, something electrical or magnetic in the Earth. And maybe that holds an area that has a little more magnetism than anywhere else.
Right.
Where it's able to capture and then replay when the conditions are right.
Right. So are there any hauntings on there that are what you would call evil or bad hauntings?
Well, only as legend. I don't think, the only one that, I don't know if it's bad haunting, but Nine Men's Misery, where during King Philip's War, nine men were actually killed by the Indians and scalped, and they say they were skinned, but I don't think the Indians would have time in the middle of a battle. But they were taken prisoner and killed, and left for dead, and they were buried in this one spot. But they were tortured first, because the Captain Pierce had broke ranks and fled, so they had to come back with reinforcements. So he had time to torture them before killing them a little bit.
Great.
And they were buried in this one spot, and they say that they can hear screams of agony and terror coming from the area.
Wow.
And where they, you know, I guess they're reenacting their final moments.
Yeah, that's common. You know, to me it seems hard to believe that someone would not realize that they're dead, and I guess this is one of the more common explanations for ghosts. Someone dies a tragic death, right? Or a sudden death, and they're not aware that they've died. Do you suppose that that's true?
I've pondered that a lot, because when we move around, like I said, we're energy. We have eyes and we have hands and feet and everything to make this, to utilize our energy. And I guess if you died, you probably might think you still have that.
Right.
Your energy sphere or whatever might think you still have that.
Well, I guess that's what it is. I mean, I guess there's lots of different reasons people become ghosts. But
yeah, I always say as many ways you can catch a cold.
I'll have to remember that one. That's a good one. So what are some of the other hauntings? There's 88. Jeez, that's a lot.
Yeah, there's a carousel that's haunted.
Are these all public hauntings in the book?
Yeah, you can actually go to the places, yes.
Wow. Do you have directions and everything?
Yeah, they come complete with directions.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So a haunted carousel, huh?
Yeah, there's a haunted carousel in East Providence, the Loop Carousel, and there's even a ghost of a woman seen near there, looking out over the water. Of course, there's the vampire graves.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Well, Rhode Island is actually known as the vampire capital of the world, and was known. There were more cases of reported vampirism in the 18th and 19th century than anywhere else. Yeah.
You're not kidding.
Yeah, it's great. Huh?
Well, no, it's fascinating. I mean, it's the history of the state. I would never know that it has so many graveyards and all these vampires. It's great.
Yeah, well, actually, the vampire thing was consumption, which was tuberculosis.
Okay.
And when the people got sick, they would get delirious. But you got the rural farmers, the rural folk back then, and they'd start, you know, the family was dying left and right from this, and a lot of the kids who have the fevers are saying that one of the previous dead brothers or sisters was coming back at night and visiting them. Well, what does that sound like? As they're being drained of life. So they actually would dig up the interred and look for signs of vampirism, and in some cases, some of the, you know, dead would have not rotted. In one case with Mercy Brown, which is the most famous, she was absolutely fresh and perfect.
Huh.
But of course, she died in January and was put in a keep.
Well,
it's like putting someone in a freezer, of course. Well, when they'd find their suspected vampire, they would cut out the organs, burn them to ashes, and then feed the ashes with medicine to the inflicted.
Well, did that work?
No, we'll put it this way. If you drank that, you would probably just die anyway, having to drink it.
Right. Wow.
But, yeah, last case was in 1892 with Mercy Brown. And the funny thing is, at that point, they were treating tuberculosis no more than 20 miles away in Providence. So, I mean, this is how remote some of these places were. And when Bram Stoker wrote Dracula, they found the news articles from Mercy Brown.
Isn't that interesting? Wow.
Yeah, well, the town he uses is Exeter.
Uh-huh.
And the Mercy Brown case took place in Exeter.
Oh, okay. So is there any UFO activity going on in Rhode Island that you know of?
Any what?
UFO activity? I know that's kind of out of left field.
No, actually, the Bridgewater Triangle has a lot. It's just over the line. And that has a lot of activity, and a man by the name of Christopher Balzano, who has Mass Crossroads, has talked a lot about that and studied it. They call it the Bridgewater Triangle because there's a lot of activity of UFOs and historically in Bigfoot in this triangle.
Huh.
And it's been actually stretched over into Rhode Island where these strange things have been seen, but mostly just over the Rhode Island line into Massachusetts, where actually I have that in my Haunted Massachusetts book, The Bridgewater Triangle. I touch on that.
There's been a Bigfoot sighting in Rhode Island?
Just over the line, actually, in Massachusetts there has. Near the Bridgewater. Police officers have actually said their car was lifted up by one.
Wow.
And when they spun around to shoot at it, and the state police said it was just a giant bear, but then people started seeing it in their gardens. One lady said she saw it eating a pumpkin, just taking a chunk out of a giant pumpkin, eating it like it was an apple. They even saw, a police officer even reported seeing what looked like a thunderbird.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A huge bird. I've heard about that.
It shot straight up, yeah. Yeah, I encountered one day over here. It was called a great blue heron. It scared the crap out of me. But these people said these things, this was as tall as a man, which a great blue heron certainly isn't. And even the officers said this. It just shot straight up in the air.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you suppose all these different phenomena are related? UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot? I mean, I don't know how much research you've done in that kind of... I mean, do you do just ghosts?
Well, I read into the other phenomenon because it's part of, and it intertwines, but as far as related, I don't know. I don't think so. I tend to think that if the relationship lies in nature itself as far as what it is, a phenomenon,
right.
If there's so much going on, of course it's going to coincide and intermingle and intertwine. Much like a turkey will be in the same woods as a fox and a rabbit and a coyote.
Right. Well, that's pretty much what I think. I mean, there may be similarities between, you know, UFOs and ghosts and stuff, but I still think that they're separate, unique phenomena.
Yeah, because it'd be hard to say a ghost is happening because a UFO is there or Bigfoot is causing it. I could see where it could all happen in the same area but not be related.
Right. So, Haunted Rhode Island, what other books are you working on? Have you
written
others?
Yeah, Haunted New Hampshire is coming out this month.
Wow.
And that's on the same premise, all places in New Hampshire you can visit. And Haunted Massachusetts will be out in May.
You have been busy.
Oh, yeah. We're just finishing Pirate Ghosts and Phantom Ships, which is due in November.
Well, I'm going to have you back on the show. So tell us a little bit about some of these other books, Haunted New Hampshire.
Haunted New Hampshire is it's on the same premise. It's all the places you can visit that are haunted in the state. And a lot of them are actually in the lower end of the state, because that's where the most population is. And there's a lot of haunted restaurants and bed and breakfasts and places like that.
You visited all? You visited as many as you could?
Yeah, we visit about 75% of them.
Wow.
We do the best we can.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, and while we're there, we do investigations, too. That's also why it takes us a longer time to go than a person who would just go to, you know, see it, take a few pictures, because I insist on doing investigations to see if I can try and catch something, you know, an EVP, maybe see an apparition or a residual or whatever.
Right.
Or get something on film. So we actually try to do a little, as long as we can anyway. Usually they're like, you know, 20 minutes to 40 minute investigations, but it's something.
Well, you're probably still receiving a lot of new stories about from Rhode Island.
Yes, I have, actually.
But you're going to have to, I mean, what do you do with those? You're putting them together for another book, right?
I don't know. I see how many I collect over the next year or so while we're doing the other books. We have to do Abandoned Villages first, which there are a lot in this New England.
Right.
And as I go along, I'll see what happens with Rhode Island, because a lot of people, when I got in touch with them, they didn't want to talk to me. I guess they didn't care. Then they see the book, and they're like, well, why didn't you come to me?
Exactly. You know, I've had that experience.
Yeah.
And once the book comes out, then that sort of opens the floodgates for people to talk.
Right. And which is good, though, because a lot of people are afraid sometimes, and then when they see they're not crazy or anything, then they're more than happy to share their feelings, which is really good, because it only helps anybody else who is looking to investigate and, you know, further the science, with the findings of this science.
All right. So what are the haunted places that are in the book? Are they like mostly restaurants and hotels?
No, actually, there's Parker Woodland, which is a place where there are cairns and a couple of farm foundations that are supposedly haunted, some graveyards, an old monastery. We tried to, you know, the graveyards, of course, there's a lot of those. But there's Dolly Cole Brook, which is haunted by the ghost of Dolly Cole, and a place on Tucker Hollow Road in Foster, which is a lot, just an empty lot where a house was, and that's haunted by the old lady who lived there. She shunned everybody. They thought she was a witch. There's the phantom dog of Fort Wetherill, which is an old army fort. There's tons of army forts along the coastline of Rhode Island, which has one of the biggest coastlines in the country for its size. And there's, in Middletown, there's a chasm called Purgatory Chasm, where a Indian girl supposedly killed a man or something, and the devil cut off her head and threw her over the side, and her headless ghost has been seen walking for 175 years along the beach.
See, I was going to ask you if you have any Native American ghosts. So.
Oh, yeah. There's the Great Swamp Memorial, there's one where Narragansett Indians were nearly wiped out. You can hear the fights going on. Many people have heard them. And we have one right down the road here from us, which is the Indian ghost of Hannah Frank.
Huh.
And she was murdered by two people. And actually, they were both Indians, too, when she decided to marry a white man, they call it, as you say. And they accosted both of them, headed them off, and they chopped his head off and shot her. They were buried. We actually found the cemetery where they're buried in the old graves in the middle of the woods. And they were just like hand-honed, chiseled stones. But you could tell they were gravestones because they had been preserved. And her ghost has been seen wandering around there since 1831.
Wow. So have you ever gone to, like, people who have had haunted houses problems and tried to resolve their ghosts?
Oh, yeah, we do a lot of that. I just don't put them in a book because they're confidential.
Right.
And I don't like people being bothered. You know, that's the one thing, because you put it in the book, and the next thing you know, people are pulling up, taking pictures, you know, pulling their roots, their trees out for souvenirs or something.
Right.
So we do a lot of that, yeah. And whether, even when we do, like, if we find something great, but if we find what the reason is and it's not a haunting, that's still a success, because I consider, because we've solved their problem.
Right. What were one of those cases? That's pretty interesting, though. People think they have a ghost, and turns out they don't.
Right. Yeah, one case, this lady said her radio was talking to her all the time. And so I was like, okay, that's weird. And I said, try and write down what it is next time. And she couldn't understand it. So I went there, and we were listening, and all of a sudden the radio starts talking. Now, most radios don't turn off these days. They go on standby. And what it was CB Truckers talking, coming through her radio.
Huh.
And another one was a guy and his wife, they bought a house in the country after living in the city. So they moved there with their two kids and cat. And they called, and the place was haunted. Like, you would not believe. All night long, they hear these noises, and they don't understand what it is. So we set up cameras, and what it was they were so used to living in the city with all the noise, they never heard their cat running around at 2 o'clock in the morning. But the camera saw this little guy, as mental as everything, jumping everywhere.
Oh, that's a pretty funny story.
Yeah, so, I mean, these are success stories, too, because, you know, we can put them at peace.
Right. Well, have you ever been able to communicate with a ghost and send him on its way?
Actually, I don't do that. I don't, like, send them on their way. I do have people that come with me when I do that. And that are what you call demonologists, if people want them. But 99% of the time, most of the people we've ever dealt with don't want to get rid of their ghost.
Wow.
I think they find it a prestigious or something to have this, you know.
Well,
in my case, I'm like, well, help out with the housework.
Well, it's definitely interesting. I don't know if I'd want to keep a ghost there. But.
Yeah, some people, I mean, like I tell them, it's been here long before you, unless, you know. If it's an old house, a lot of times it's old houses.
Right.
But we have demonologists that I know that would do that if I wanted to, and that's where a coalition I'm with, each person is an expert in their own thing. Like, my wife's a professional photographer. You know, I go in and do all with the investigations, with the searching and the researching, and finding out the histories and everything, and detecting what is and what isn't.
Right. Do you bring any clairvoyance? You bring in clairvoyants or mediums or psychics?
Yeah, we have. I know a few of them that are really good, that are really, you know, accurate. And I can call on them. I can call on EVP specialists like Karen Mossy. She's one who's her stuff was used in the trailers for the movies, White Noise and stuff. And she's over here.
Well, that's our time. So I want to thank you very much, Thomas, for coming onto the show.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure being on.
It's very interesting. So people out there, get this book, Haunted Rhode Island. It sounds fascinating and just really interesting. So thank you again, and you were a great guest.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
All right, everyone. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal, Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett. Our subject tonight was Haunted Rhode Island with Thomas D'Agostino. Go out there and buy that book. I'm sure you'll find it very interesting. Next week, we're going to be talking to Dr. Georgina Canyon about 10 ways to discover your past life identity. Sounds interesting. Hope you can join us. Have a good evening.